Interview is being conducted on December 9th, 2004 at the Indian Prairie Public Library. My name is Martin Thomas. I'm speaking with Mr. Alexander L. Moscato. Mr. Moscato was born on August 2nd, 1925 in Chicago, Illinois, and now lives in Downers Grove, Illinois. Mr. Moscato and I are fellow members of the Indian Boundary YMCA in Downers Grove, and he has kindly consented to be interviewed for the Veterans History Project. Here is his story. Mr. Moscato, how would you prefer to be addressed during this interview?
Al or Alex, makes no difference.
Thank you. Al, when did you first enter the service?
July 7th, 1943.
So you entered on July 7th, 1943. Where were you living at that time before you went in?
You want the address or Chicago?
No, just
Chicago.
Chicago? And what were you doing there?
I worked for for a bread company, Kroger. Kroger Bakery.
Kroger, the same as the supermarket?
Yeah, right.
Food store?
Yeah.
Well, you were just, you were not quite 18 when you went in. You were a month shy, right?
Well, that was the reason for when you get to the enlisting part.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, were you drafted or did you enlist?
No, I to beat the draft.
Because you knew that...
Because my brother was a soldier, and he more or less told us not to get into the Army. So I joined the Coast Guard.
So you joined the Coast Guard because you didn't... You wanted to follow your brother's advice.
And I had to be in boot camp before my 18th birthday. Otherwise, I'm subjected to draft. That was what they told me. I didn't get no time. When I enlisted to go through the procedure of becoming a Coast Guardsman, we left within a week or so. Where everybody else, when they went in, they usually give it a month.
So you, this was your older brother that was already in the Army?
Yes.
And where was he located at that
time? At that time, he was in Florida waiting to go overseas because he was actually in a fighting area.
And so that's why he gave his younger
yes.
brother that advice.
Yeah.
How'd your parents feel about you enlisting in the Coast Guard?
Well, they felt the same way. They listened to my brother and said that Victor kind of let you know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in the fields, you're in mud up to you know what, and
uh-huh.
then you're in hot areas in the
yeah.
jungles and all that. So I went by his decision because I knew I was going to get drafted.
So that's why you picked the Coast
yeah.
Guard. And where were you inducted?
Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Downtown Chicago, if you want to put that.
So what were your first days like? You're not quite 18 and now you're in the...
Well, kind of lonesome. I went through the battle of, I think, that everyone that leaves home.
Was that your first time away from home?
Yeah.
For an extended period
yeah.
of time? Now, the Coast Guard boot camp, is that a separate from the Navy?
Yes.
And where was your boot camp?
Manhattan Beach, New York.
How long was boot camp?
How was it?
No, how long was it?
I think 6 weeks, or I'm pretty sure it was 6 weeks. I have no idea on that.
And what was it like for you?
Well, it's the training that you go through of firing guns, marching, taking orders,
mm-hmm.
and doing sentry duty. This was all part of your learning procedure.
When you say firing guns, you're talking about
rifles,
small arms, rifles?
Yeah, but the trouble with servicemen in the Navy or Coast Guard, they very seldom use a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of a soldier's gear.
Mm-hmm.
So he lives with the rifle on his back. We don't.
Mm-hmm.
Some got training. In fact, to tell you the truth, I don't think I was trained for that. But we knew it was part of the...
Mm-hmm.
So they never knew they were worried about the fact that we had to shoot somebody, you know, with a rifle, that
uh-huh.
is.
But they had some familiarization firing.
Yes.
Firing.
We didn't break down the rifles like the soldiers do. They got they have to break it down and put it back together.
Right.
We didn't have to do that.
So with the drills and so forth, what were the your NCOs, your drill instructors like?
Some were a little tough, but most of them were, they knew we were all boots, to call them boots.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you got to follow orders. If you don't, you're going to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So,
so boot camp lasted about 6 weeks. Where did you go after that?
I went aboard the general, the cop. It's on this side, I think. There. These are the three ships I was on. I went on to Cutter Cobb first.
Uh-huh. Now, did you have any advanced training before you went aboard the Cutter Cobb?
Yes, I wanted to say part of the training, you get the, you shoot the 5-inch, 20-millimeter ash cans, or they call them...
depth chargers.
Depth chargers, yeah. You were taught how to, when they give you a reading to go down so far, you have a key,
mm-hmm.
or and you set it for the depth they want. Then they roll off when they want to drill. When they figure they're over the ship or submarine, most cases.
Now, where did you get this training? Was that still in boot camp or after?
No, they took us away and put us on a ship. And with the fire the guns was in Long Island. Long Island, I think it's Long Island. They had probably 25, 20 millimeters, and they had 2 5-inch 38s, which are part of almost all the ships had them. And that was set on a platform that rocked. They could make it roll and rock, and then they had sleeves going over.
Uh-huh.
An airplane pulling a sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're given the command to fire, we fire on it. We didn't hit one.
No, this was part of your advanced training.
Yes.
At what point did they tell you what your rating was going to be, what type of work you'd be doing?
Well, you do deck. It was a deckhand.
Mm-hmm.
And that that was about the farthest up I got. I never took any for coxswain or...
Uh-huh. So what was the rating that you had?
Seaman first.
Seaman first. And to be a seaman first, in your case, you had to be able to fire these various weapons, handle a depth charge.
Yeah. See, you only handle the gunnery that's going to be on the ship, so that's why we never had... We didn't have to be trained with rifles.
Mm-hmm. So the Cutter Cobb, where did that take you?
That just stayed off the coast of New York. We were,
Weren't you in Connecticut?
No, that wasn't. We went there once, but get a little too. It's
was
on the East Coast.
Patrolling?
Yeah, while it was learning to be a seaman, you're taught the
rope. This was a sort of a training.
Yes,
ship.
That's exactly what it was.
And Al, how long did that training last? Or from what month to what month, roughly?
What was a month? It was probably maybe a week or two.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we were on it. I'm sorry. We were on a ship for, I would say, a year, close to a year.
On the Cobb?
Yeah. Then we got transferred to the General MC Meigs.
So you would have gotten, you've been on the Cobb roughly, I'm trying to work this out, August, somewhere about August of 44 then is when you left the conference.
Yeah, I would say that, and that's when I, the dates like that, I just can't help you.
Uh-huh. But that, was there anything that you did between the time you were on the Cutter Cobb and the time you went on the ship? And I'm looking here, for the record, I'm looking at a card at Alex's.
No, that all started when I got on the, we never went over, went into foreign waters with the Cobb. It was,
uh-huh.
in fact, it was an old ferry boat.
That's what the Cobb was?
Yeah.
We was looked it a converted at, ferry?
Yeah. We looked at it, we couldn't understand what the Coast Guard was doing with the ship.
Did this?
It had a back end that was made to fit into a dock to unload and load.
Passengers.
And then the front was a bow.
Uh-huh.
So,
Did the Cutter Cobb have armament on it then?
Yeah.
So it was an armed ferry?
Yes, well, they didn't call it ferry.
It was part of
the training. You never told a Navy man you were on a ferry boat. It's bad enough that you're in the Coast Guard and they work you over for that, you know. There's always that little bit of like the Marines and the...
Inter-service rivalry.
Rivalry, yes. But, like I said, we're taught to fire guns on that. But that'll lead into another ship that I've got just before I went on the MiGs.
Uh-huh. Okay, for the record, Alex has a card, a hand-printed postcard, actually.
Yeah.
That lists all the locations he was on his next two ships. And we will be going through those one at a time.
Yeah.
But before we, and the first one here is the General
MC MiGs.
MC MiGs. And that's MEIGS.
I thought it was MEI. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And that was the Atlantic Theater. Yes. So before we get to your duty aboard the General MiGs, was there anything else you did between the time you're on the Cobb and the time you went to the MiGs?
Yeah, we were on the Naval Clinton, USS Clinton, for other training out to sea.
Uh-huh.
It was a pre-commissioning, cruise, or whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
Where we were taught out to sea what a ship that came the same armament which we would probably get.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we weren't trained on it, but we were in the rough waters and learning how to fire the guns in rough seas because you didn't have much time. And I mean, when the ship is rolling and rocking, to fire at a plane or a surface water or a submarine or anything, it would be pretty hard.
So you had training.
Yes.
Now, you told me before about firing at the sleeves being towed by planes.
Yeah.
How did they simulate another ship? What did you fire?
Well, the only thing we had was a submarine made out of... It was a platform with a conning tower made out of lathwork.
Mm-hmm.
And that was being towed by a tug.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, make sure, don't shoot at the tug. But that's what we shot in.
Uh-huh.
And that was a surface. One was a surface enemy, and the other was an aerial.
Mm-hmm.
And you got so much time when the airplane went over first and there was a long rope or whatever they used and the sleeve was red and it was probably maybe 20 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we fired it with a bursting shell.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't when it hit, it would explode.
Right.
These went up so high and then they would burst and some of the shrapnel would put holes in it. So, but we weren't that lucky.
Mm-hmm.
To make a hit, you know.
Well, now, the USS Clinton, that certainly preceded our President Clinton by 50 years. who was that ship named after?
It was, I don't remember the first part of it, but it was Navy, manned.
Uh-huh.
And then they, of course, being in the Coast Guard, we weren't too treated very well because there was that rivalry, as I said before. But I stayed on there. We stayed on there. I can't remember. It was a week or so. Then we come back, and we were assigned different ships.
Mm-hmm.
See, when you're in the Coast Guard, you don't. When you're all done, you don't go on one ship. It's ships that need crew members, and they sent so many here, so many there.
Uh-huh.
That's how they picked me for the Cobb.
So the Cobb and the Clinton, and then before you were assigned to the General MiGs, did you get any shore leave? Were you able to go back home and visit family?
No, never. I only made one trip back, and that was later, and just before I was still on the Atlantic. Yeah, I can't remember the date on that, but I came home once at 3, just short of 3 years.
So when were you assigned to the MIGs?
When we were done with the Navy, when we were done practicing, what is the word? And then we come back, and then they assigned us from our cutter to ships. And we were glad to get off of it because it was an old tug. It could only do about 19 knots an hour. Uh-huh. And that's at full steam, so. So. Excuse me. So, and then we got assigned to the General MC MIGs. And I don't remember what the complement was when we went on. I think there was probably 30 guys, 30 seamen.
On the MIGs were just 30?
Yeah.
What size ship was that?
It was an AP, which is Army Personnel. And the number was one. I don't remember the number. Every ship had a number.
Uh-huh.
And it was an AP Army Personnel.
So it was to
transport.
So it was like a troop ship?
Yeah.
Oh, this wasn't for escort. This was actually for.
Well, we were just taught that because this ship had this all on there.
Mm-hmm.
And you were a prize to the Germans. They sunk you.
Sure.
Because we had 5,000 troops we carried.
5,000 troops and 30.
Yeah, they were in the holds down below. And when there was a. We went through drills, and when a drill, they had to leave the thing and get back down in the holds, mm-hmm. seal all the doors, and stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wondering what's going on topside.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? But it was just a drill, and they notified them that it was a drill. But,
yeah.
Because them are the things we had to do when we get on board our own ship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is on the MIGs, yeah.
So with the MIGs, now, Al, on the MIGs, roughly, how long were you assigned to that ship?
Oh, buddy, I would say approximately a year.
About a year. And you have a postcard here that looks like you wrote all these down back at the time,
mm-hmm.
judging from the kind of ink and all. You have written down all the ports that you visited. First of all, what was your mission? What was the ship's mission? Just transferring troops?
Troop transfer. Avoid it. We never ran in a convoy,
mm-hmm.
because this ship was brand new and it could do almost 22 knots. So we did a zigzag course across the, and then in all the crossings, we only one time, there were submarine packs that lay on the bottom when mm-hmm. you go through the Straits of Gibraltar.
Straits of Gibraltar.
Yeah. So that's when they want us. We got in a convoy of maybe about 70 ships. And then you're put in the middle because they want to protect you. Plus the fact that you're going about eight miles an hour. I'll talk about a boring time. Our deal with the convoy wasn't too happy. Because
mm-hmm.
we were used to a ship that traveled at the speed we did.
Uh-huh.
And we never got hit. But that's how we did it.
Were there ever any submarine sights?
No. We had the destroyers in the front and on the side and the rear.
Uh-huh.
And they represented going forward, the two would pad all their sonars going for motors underneath the water, you know, like submarine motors.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones on the side were the same thing. But they said if you fell in the water, you would likely not be picked up because when you're traveling in a convoy, the worst thing you can do is shut down. They can pick you off just like a man with a rifle.
So if you fell overboard, you're on your own?
The only thing you could hope is the destroyers in the rear spot you. They can't use a radio.
Mm-hmm.
They had radio silence. So so if you fell in, you would hope that they would pick you up. So, and they would have to see it, so it's just a matter of...
To your knowledge, did anyone fall over?
No. I'm sorry, I got this little cough.
Me too.
Yeah.
You got a number of ports that you stopped at, and I see even including Brazil, Would you explain some of those stops and...
You want me to do it from top to bottom or just go right to Brazil?
In chronological order, where'd you first go and...
Yeah, well, we made a trip to Naples with a full full amount of soldiers, which it was up to 5,000 soldiers.
And was that straight across the...
Straight across.
And where did you depart from?
New York.
New York, and went straight to Naples, which was in Allied hands by then.
Excuse me. Allied hands, yeah. I'm thinking, was it New York or was it Norfolk, Virginia? It could have been Norfolk or New York. That's the only thing I can tell you, Marty.
Uh-huh.
But we left most of the time. I'm pretty sure it was Norfolk.
But Naples was secured by the Allies by the,
yes.
Allies by the time.
Yeah, the only thing they had was barrage balloons at different levels with chains hanging down them for strafing.
Oh, sure.
So if they came in low, they had a good chance of running them before they dropped their bombs.
Mm-hmm.
But Naples was secure. There was a lot of ships underwater. Oh. We see the ships that we bombed. Excuse me. But that was my deal in Naples, was just to drop off 5,000 troops, and then we stayed there as maybe a liberty of half of the crew at one time, because you never could leave the ship without a crew in case there is a raid or something, or a bombing attack.
And when was this that you were in Naples?
The very beginning, when I got on the ship in that 44, I think. We made five trips, carried 5,000 each time.
Now, so your first time, did you get a liberty in Naples?
No. We got for a day, you know.
Uh-huh.
Getting back to what I said, half of the crew had to be on board, so you went out half, and then you maybe left around 9 o'clock in the morning. You had to be back at 2. So when you come back, other crew members were able to have liberty. That's the word I was thinking of. It's a liberty.
So you did go into Naples?
Yeah.
What did you see? What are the
Well, you seen a town where, being an Italian extraction myself, and everybody said, well, you'll make out. I never could speak that much. But we seen the people, what they were going through, that they were selling their bodies for food. They would take anything, clothing. Some of the sailors took their shorts off and gave it to them. I mean, that's how bad off they were. But chocolate and candy was the big thing. You can get more or less taken care of for a couple of chocolate candy bars. They were I felt so sorry for them. Especially the kids would come up to you and they want to take you to their house for the sex part of it. That's about it. I don't like to talk about that too much, but...
And the buildings were...
Yeah, they were pretty shut. See, Naples, I don't think really got to hit them that much. I think they get... I don't remember or recall whether it was bombed or strafed or anything. But, mm-hmm. of course, the people didn't have hardly anything. You know, they were just shut off of everything. And so that's the reason why they were doing anything and everything to...
Survive.
Get some food and survive, yeah.
So now you said after that trip to Naples, you made five trips to Naples?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I made 9 trips.
Were they all to Naples or to these various other places?
No, do you want me to continue on?
Oh, yeah, you went to Naples first.
And now we went to Oran, North Africa, and that was strictly... We pulled in, tied off, and what we got let off the ship, and what we took on, I don't know. Mm-hmm. They just tied up, and they had to put rat guards to prevent rats coming up the hawsers or the line. And we stayed, in fact, we didn't stay a whole day. We left that day. So we included as part of where our ship went.
But you say on that particular voyage, you weren't carrying troops?
To tell you the truth, Marty, I can't even tell you that.
Oh, okay.
And then we went to Bizerte, North Africa. I think I spelled that right.
Yeah, would you spell it for the...
B-E-S-E-R-T-E, Bizerte.
And that was North Africa?
That was another port in North Africa.
And what were you carrying that time?
there again, Marty, I don't know.
You know, it's
carpool. We pulled in there for reasons that when you're a seaman or you just do your, what you're told, mm-hmm. and that's it, so.
Did you have liberty in either of those two
no,
ports?
No, all we say we tied up at these, mm-hmm. these ports, well, we didn't have any liberty because they had a plague going with rats, and that was a real day when we put our lines up. They didn't have, they had seamen out there to make sure the rat guards were put on.
Uh-huh.
Because they didn't want any disease. Because you get a disease aboard a big ship like that, and you're carrying 5,000 troops. Yeah. They can't, quarantine. When you pull into a port, they won't let you discharge anyone.
And so this was a rat-borne plague, like
yes,
the bubonic plague?
Yes, that's what it was. But, you know, I don't know if they were trying to scare us, whether it was how true it was, but we listened. And so I didn't want to go on a dock or in the area with that going on.
Yeah.
Okay, then the next one. Now, these don't come. The next one is Southampton, England. We stopped there. And then we went across the La Havre, because La Havre is right under it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if we dropped off soldiers or not. But anyway, we went to La Havre and did something there. Again, I don't remember what it is. So there were two places, the fact that we were in the English Channel, which was a hell of a place for ships to go through, because they had submarines all through the canal. They were knocking off a lot of English ships.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really a prize. When you're on a munition ship, carrier, not the big guys, paddle wagons, that big one. They normally wanted to sink material or personnel. Mm-hmm. So that's why our ship was, heavily guarded. We had put guards on the street, on the dock when we were only there for 5, 6, 7 hours,
mm-hmm.
to make sure no one climbed aboard. You know. And Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, we went empty. And we picked up 5,000 Brazilians.
Mm-hmm.
We were the first ship to bring Brazilian troops into the war in World War II. And they were taken to Naples.
Uh-huh.
And they were dropped off there, and they were assigned naturally with there. And our soldiers went down to Brazil to teach them all about war, because most of them, they were coconut picker-uppers, you know, climb trees
uh-huh.
for coconuts.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't even know what I don't know if you ever seen an army shoe with that big leather top right above the lacings.
Oh, yeah, the high tops.
They only went up about that far. They had to be taught everything. And when they were wearing them, they had to take them off. So when they were aboard the ship, they had these little wooden clots. They'd take them off and leave their shoes there. When they went on deck, or they had them little things.
Oh, because they just didn't feel comfortable wearing
shoes. No, I mean, they were natives, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they were. They were, like I say, people that never knew what war was. So their commander, their big generals, or president, President Vargas was his name, the president of Brazil at that time. He came aboard our ship and presented us with a silver plate with his signature donated to the General Embassy of Mexico. No, I'm sorry. The APA Chase. No, I'm sorry. I'm getting all confused. It was the General. It was the Mex. Chase didn't come on to the other.
Yeah. So what do they do with that plate? Do they mount it on a bulkhead?
No, it's put in it's put in the officer's quarter. It'd be like this. They have a room like this with their own messmen.
Their own wardroom.
And that's where they have then their letters are not censored. Ours were all censored.
Oh, so, I'm going to ask you about correspondence back
yeah,
home.
But anyway, that was the deal. They had it in probably in an area where the officers.
Mm-hmm.
Met for lunch, suppers, and all that.
Were you allowed to go ashore in Rio de Janeiro?
Yeah, we had liberty there. I can honestly say I did have some fun. Being real, you know, that was, they didn't know what war was. I mean, the streets and the taverns and all these areas for dancing and all that were all there. So we stayed there, like I say, we didn't have an overnight. We never had an overnight when we were in most of these places. Mm-hmm. You usually ended at something, then you had to be in. And the ones that didn't come in or come in later, they got written up and they had, you know, got court, not court-martialed, they didn't use that expression.
Captain's Mass?
Yeah.
So in Rio, do you remember what month you were there?
I have no idea.
I was just wondering if Carnival was about to...
No, I didn't even know the word then.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it was used back in the 40s, middle of the 40s, I don't know.
So you got off in town in Rio. Are there any sites that you saw you want to share?
no. I wanted to bring everyone home a souvenir.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought my mother a flower, which was all butterfly wings. And it was a table about, it would be like the size of a table you'd put next to your chair.
Mm-hmm.
And it disassembled and it all fit in one another. So the top part would turn over, then the biggest part, it was the three sections. They'd screw it off. Everything was screwed. I couldn't believe how they did this with this wood. I think it was teak or something. They made it, and each one had knots in it all the way around. So they had a light inside too. The light would go on, you see. It would glow, and then the knots were darker. Give me some more water, will you, Sean? Yeah, I better stop. The table was disassembled into three pieces, but the smallest part goes on the back part, and then builds up the next one. It's cone shape, and then the next one come off in there, and the bottom one turned over, and that's how I tied it up. I covered it with canvas. And then I brought a religious table. For one of my aunts who was very religious, and I wanted to bring home, so I brought this.
This was also from Brazil.
Yeah, it's Last Supper, and I brought my brother a cigarette case. What do you call it? It was made like this, and it was pewter, made out of pewter. It had a dragon on it. And then that would fit your breast. It was a cigarette case. And it held, I don't even think it held 20 cigarettes. But anyway, I gave him that. I had an uncle. I brought him back an alligator skin wallet. And I bought my mother a purse that was made out of alligator.
Mm-hmm.
I'm adding it all up. I couldn't believe it. And then I had three these trays that had handles on them. They all fit into each other. The last one was about this big. The other one was a tray for serving food. And I stacked them all in there. I don't know how in the hell I brought this all on.
So you're all able to...
I brought everything that I wanted to give to my family, so to speak.
So you knew then that you'd be going back home for leave, or were you going to ship it to them?
Well, we got into New York. Well, we come into New York that time, and they had on the docks all the things you wanted to ship home. Mm-hmm. And you just had to know how to package it and put it down there and fill out one of these cards,
mm-hmm.
and they shipped it for you. So
free of charge?
I don't remember paying for it, so I think the government paid for it.
That's nice.
So that's the... my Rio de Janeiro extent. There's a lot more to it, but I think that's enough. I'll be here all day if I tell you everything about it.
Okay. Are there any other interesting ports that you visited there?
When I went to England, Le Havre, we did get a liberty in Le Havre. I was, I just remember going to a park. We had the morning.
So that was all secured then?
Oh, yeah. Bizzardi was in, oh, with us, France was, didn't, I don't think they sent any shows that I remember. But ships could land there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did. They took us. Paragon, Marty, I don't know what for.
Mm-hmm.
Being, like I say.
So your mission, your ship's mission on in the MiGs was transporting troops and, and materiel. What was your specific job or jobs?
I was a seaman first.
And what kind of things did they have you do?
Well, out to sea, we did chipping. Steel plates have a tendency of rusting.
Mm-hmm.
And all we did was chip, and they give you this paint to put on, a red lid, they call it that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a, and then the gray was put on after we had, our ship was all gray. And, of course, it wasn't made camouflaged. I think that was done, too, because of the fact we traveled so fast. So your submarines underwater could only go about, I don't know, 12, 14 knots an hour. And when they come out, they weren't much faster.
Well, you said your job was chipping and painting. Are you talking about the hull on the outside?
No, when you're out to sea, you don't hang over the
side. Okay, that's what I was going to ask you, if you're on scaffolds while the ship was...
Well, as soon as we came to port, if there was bad on the sides,
yeah.
They'd send us down in a Jacob's ladder. We didn't have platforms. They had a Jacob's ladder. You put it on, and you were lowered
mm-hmm.
up and down. Of course, it wasn't released like they got now, that they could come down a mountain or go up.
Was it like rappelling?
Yeah, rappelling.
Yeah.
But we got into port, then of course we had to put sentries out every port we went.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
No, I know what a Jacob's ladder is, but just for the interview, would you explain what it looked like and how you would climb up and down a Jacob's ladder to paint and chip?
Well, a Jacob's ladder, Jacob's ladder is what they use to bring someone up. See, and my mind is ahead of my mouth, or vice versa. Jacob's ladder is a ladder that goes all the way down to the water.
Mm-hmm.
And if we take on a pilot, the pilot's boat comes up to it. In fact, almost every port we went in, we had to have a pilot. The captain, they're not allowed to bring the ship in because they know that the terrain under the ground, where the high spots are, low spots are. So that's what a Jacob ladder. Now, I can't remember what this seat was. Oh, bosun.
A
bosun seat. B-O-S-U-N, bosun.
Uh-huh.
And that was used if you were on the chimney. They'd love to hear me talk. On the, whatever.
Stack.
The stack.
Uh-huh.
He knows better than I do. You could, the only way you rappel down is someone releasing you.
Uh-huh.
They would bring you up and lower you. They had to have people on deck, was over the side, because we painted the stack as we traveled too.
Right. Well, actually, the bosun's seat, I really don't know what that looks like. It's just two ropes with
a board across it.
With a board?
Yes.
What keeps you from falling over backwards out of the thing?
Well, you make sure that you've got one holding while you're painting. Oh, it was big enough that you could sit in it without tipping or anything.
Have anyone ever fallen out of one?
No. I don't know of it because I never was in one. I never did anything over the side. So it was strictly, and there wasn't much
in it.
Did
it look like a child's swing? Just
yeah,
ropes
basically,
flat?
Yeah. I think it was made that the rope went down on the board in a position that it wouldn't tip that easy.
Okay.
If it was just a rope down to the board, you could see it could be tipped very easy. So
how do you hold your can of paint while you're...
Well, they hang on the side. They got hooks, and they hook them on the side, and hammers.
Uh-huh.
They had the chipping hammers that we used to chip paint. And then we had a paint, too, right away. When you got done, they would send a bucket down of the red lead, and then they'd let it dry. It dried real fast, and then they put the gray on.
When you weren't on duty on these trips, what was there to do on board for you, besides sleep?
Well, we got very little time. We had a man of four guns, which was five men, and we had four guns, two in the stern and two in the bow.
Mm-hmm. And what size guns were those?
Five-inch 38s.
Five-inch 38s.
Troy was a shell about that big around. And we had to pull duty 4 hours. And from the bow, the guns that are on the bow, there's a crow's nest that's behind you. And you had to supply a man for there, and then he would scan the horizon. They have one in the rear going to the stern.
Just a man up there with binoculars?
Yeah, and they traveled not 360 degrees, 90 degrees, it was 90, from left all the way to right. And if he's seen anything that looked like a conning tower, or, he was supposed to report it to the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And you're controlled by the bridge. You hooked up with phones, like you, I think you saw it at.
Mm-hmm.
And give reports, I mean, how anything spotted, or of course, when you're traveling at night, I don't know how the hell you could see anything. But if it was a ship, you'd see, naturally, there's a silhouette. But so anyway, that was our duties. And of course, we had mess hall duties, and we had all the other stuff that goes with it, being a supplying crews to do the washrooms, keeping them clean, and the rest I can't remember anything.
How about when you're off duty? Then what's there to do?
Well, they had movies in the mess hall. Of course, no lights on deck. You couldn't have it out on deck.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't even light a cigarette. So when you left the hallways, they didn't call it that, but there was a black canvas type thing that opened, and once you got in there, you closed it, then they had another one so you can go out on deck.
Uh-huh.
So that was to prevent any light being seen by the enemy. So fortunately, I never was involved in any missions of. We're going to be here a long time because we're still in the European theater. Yeah.
Well,
I could jump down up here.
No, that's all right. How long were you on the MiGs again? When did your duty end on the MiGs?
Well, all I know is we made five trips.
Five trips.
To, and most of them was from New York, either Norfolk or New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd unload the trips and come back. And then load up again and go again. That's just like a ferry boat, you know. But the actual time, I can't remember.
How long would a crossing generally take?
Well, being the fact that we have to go on a zigzag course, it would take a lot longer. I would say 4 or 5 days, maybe longer, I don't know.
Now, on those trips that you made there, did you ever have any where you hit, you said you weren't ever under attack, but did you ever have significantly heavy weather?
Oh, yeah, that comes with crossing at any time. You get the heavy weather, that's when you find out if you got sea legs.
Uh-huh.
Or you don't, you know, go through the procedure of vomiting, you know.
Yeah.
Which happens a lot. And then, of course, the old salt, which was on the ship before we got there. They all maybe had 5, 6, 7 years in the Navy, in a Coast Guard.
Mm.
And of course, they one fella come out with a knuckle, a pig's knuckle with the fat on it.
Uh-huh.
And he's walking on, and all the guys say, when you see food, especially, they right to the railing. Or it was some of the guys. I never got sick.
Uh-huh.
Never got sick. So he'd pull a four-hour stint at the on the gun, and then we'd go in, and we were free to sleep if it was during the night, like 9 to 4, was the shift that way. And each gun had to have a four-man crew. The 20 millimeters, I can't remember. We had 20s and a 40 millimeter. You ever see them put the shells in, standing facing each other, and you see the guns going like this?
Oh, yes.
That's a 40 millimeter.
Uh-huh.
They throw a shell out. Oh, roughly about 18 inches, or about that big around.
What they call the Bofors, or is that a different?
No, I don't know. We only used 40 millimeters.
Well, we're talking about the size of the guns. You mentioned something before, and I should have asked then. You talked about 5-inch 38s.
Yeah.
So 5 inches the diameter of the barrel. What does the 38 refer to?
It refers to the when size breaks down to smaller size, I don't know what that word is. like, you got a hole and it, that, it's a little bit bigger than 5-inch, you got to add, I don't know, it, not inches, centimeters or whatever to make it larger. That's where the 38 comes in. It wasn't a 5-inch gun, it was a 5-inch. That's all I know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, on the mix, are there any other interesting experiences we should talk about?
Crossing the equator was the biggest thing we ever had.
Oh, when you went down to Rio?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That was a big part of the crossing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that and the ceremony. You said, you told me there's a ceremony that goes along with crossing the equator.
Yeah, if you see here, they're all dressed. This is, each one had a name.
King Neptune.
Yeah,
there.
King Neptune. And then they had the queen. She was, oh, God. She was, I don't know, there's pictures of it. You could find them. I don't know where they're all at. See, this is our captain. And then he, we're all standing at, and then they come up and cut your tie off, put prunes in your mouth that's been laying in Tabasco sauce and tell you to chew it up. And if you didn't...
And what do they tell you? Oh, they tell you to chew it up.
Yeah, you couldn't spit it out. And they had all different things that make it rough on you.
Uh-huh.
They gave a guy 2 Coke bottles, put tape around, and he was supposed to stand on a bridge, I mean, on the bow, and look for submarine tires.
Supposed to. Out of tape, and Al, you were telling me, actually, I should mention that Mrs. Moscato was sitting in on the interview also, and she reminded him of some things he told her about being alone at night. So that's what you told before when we went off tape.
You got it on again. Yes. Yeah, so naturally, being alone, you get these feelings that, not that you're going to have anything happen to you, the fear when you look at the water and you're 60 feet up and you're looking straight down at the water, it kind of gives you thoughts of things that you shouldn't be thinking about. But we lived through it.
Did you tell me when we, after we ran out of tape, that you had dreams about that?
Yes, the dreams were the dreams were definitely about falling into the ocean. And
to your knowledge, had that ever actually happened to somebody?
No, not, except for this one. Chief, that was, this was a story he sent around, because the chiefs and the first class petty officer would treat the seamen, you know, like they were dirt. And of course, a lot of, it's just like in life, in civilian life, a guy can build up a lot of hate for you and do something. Well, they told me that this is what the story was. He stepped out into one, when I told you the passageways ended with a cloth, and mm-hmm. you stepped into the dark, then you step out.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, 2 guys were supposed to be in there. He more or less cracked him on the head and they threw him overboard. Now, naturally, you don't know. This is what some guy would tell you that he heard. So it's we never found out it was true. I never seen it or even thought about that.
So, first of all, are there any other experiences on the MiGs that we should talk about?
No, there's little things, but we'd be carrying too much time with all these ships.
So what caused you to leave the MiGs?
To go into, well, the war was over. When I left the Atlantic Theater, I went to the Pacific, the war was won. In Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we were on our way back from wherever we were for Naples is one of the other ports, and we got the news. And of course, everybody celebrated with the fact that the war was over. Mm-hmm. So when we got back to port, they start taking men off of the ships that were not going to be used as much, naturally. The mags weren't going to be used delivering our soldiers or anything for the war. So ships in the Pacific that were, they needed, because they were letting guys off with points. I don't know if you knew what the points was. So they were starting.
How many points did you need to get?
Oh, you just, I don't know. I didn't even know.
How many short were you?
I didn't even think of that because I knew I was
far away.
Last one on the totem pole. The ones they took really were the old timers, the sailors. When I say old timers, they got a lot of sea duty and service duty, I should say. So they took crews, they took men, and we traveled from New York to San Francisco on a train. It was a troop train. And we were all together, the Coast Guardsmen. The worst thing that happened to us, they put us in the stern, right on the back of the train, in a Pullman car. And all the soldiers were in cattle cars. And we had to go through all these cattle cars to get the mess, to get to eat.
Uh-huh.
Well, we weren't treated too nice. You guys got it made. You got things to sleep in. Sheets, we had sheets and everything. So.
Now, you say this was after VE Day, and U.S. soldiers were being transported in the U.S. in cattle cars?
Yes, from all the areas on New York, because actually they were bringing the soldiers across to feed ships to take them over into Japan. I got this thing.
So you're saying that the soldiers actually had to ride across country, across the U.S. and Canada? Quick question before we get you out to your next ship. Why was the MiGs not being used to bring servicemen home from Europe?
Well, there again too, they were used a lot to bring the. There was a lot of soldiers left in Europe, mm-hmm. So with these crews they put on there were a lesser amount because they didn't have to man guns. They did man one gun, so they had to keep using them. But they wanted the guys that didn't
service. Yeah. But they didn't have as big a crew.
That's right. And we didn't have the points, so they would take all the seamen and all the younger fellows that were enlisted that didn't, they were maybe 19 years old. Because I went in at 18, 19 or 20, I was 20 probably.
You have to tell them too, though, that between New York and San Francisco, you stopped in Chicago.
Yeah, we had.
I was going to ask him that because you came right by.
Yeah.
We stopped in Chicago, but we never had communication to say to meet us. When they say stop, you know, you could stop for, who knows, you can't have people come over. But we never even thought of it, Marty, to tell you the truth. You never thought of asking, you. Maybe the guys that had wives might have thought of it, but I just had my mother. And.
But you didn't call your dad at all, did you?
No.
Were you able to get off the train?
I think it was mostly right on the on
was just on flight. A Union Station?
I don't remember which one it was. It was on the, well, I'm trying to think, UP and the SP, Union Pacific
and Southern Pacific.
And Southern Pacific. Now, we were the one that went through, I think both of them went through Salt Lake City. I don't know. We actually, there was only one track crossing Salt Lake City.
Well, when was the last time, when you're traveling across country, when was the last time before that you had any contact with your family, by letter?
Letters, yeah, constantly, yes.
Oh, you constantly had letters.
I wrote letters and they wrote us letters and sent boxes. I got a box a couple of times with different food that Italians eat.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember what they were now. But we'd get that from
home. How would your mail and packages reach you? Did you have to wait till you got into a port?
Well, I to tell you the truth, I do not know. We always said there's a post office in the middle of the ocean. They go on to fly and they hook them like that.
Uh-huh.
We never knew how it got. We maybe picked them up in Italy when we landed,
uh-huh.
Or even when we were down to Rio. they knew we were going there, and we were on a 4 days or 5 days to get down there. So they could forward all our mail, and we get mail there. Every place we went, I think they knew where we were going because they had it all, they had it all planned
air
out.
Air mail was scrutinized too.
Yeah, sure. Air mail was used.
But I mean, if you had mentioned a city or someplace you had been, it was blocked out before.
Yeah, so it was a mockery a little bit too, because especially if you wanted to say something, you know, a loved one or wife or something, about how much I love you, or these different terms they'd like to use. But they know there's going to be guys that read them, they may be laughing at you, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they did or not, but it's a thing that goes through your head.
Yeah.
And
they had code words.
I had one that I said, don't believe it, it's not on a bias.
Well, what does that mean?
When we were in China, we had material that worked in our shop that they cut. It was a bias room where they do all the cuttings of the bias. They made barrage balloon and life material, rubber to make them sort of work. So, well, this room was called, my father worked in the bias room.
Mm-hmm.
So I said that because we always said a woman's private part is on a bias. So I that's how he knew where I was. I come back and he says, we knew right. We didn't know the town or city or whatever. Uh-huh. But there was, you know, it was done. You couldn't send anything out. And that's to prevent the ship getting into trouble with the mail you sent out. So.
Weren't you working for Rapid Roller when you went in?
Yeah.
You told him Kroger.
In the very beginning, it was Kroger. Then I got a job at, I went from Kroger's to Rapid Roller. Dad got me.
But that, from Rapid Roller, you went into the service.
Yeah.
Well, what was Rapid Roller then?
It was a roller company that made offset printing.
Blankets for printing presses.
Oh, the rubber blankets that go on a
It goes for printing,
Print press?
Yeah, because he got his time. When he came back, he got his job back again.
Oh.
There.
They couldn't refuse your job when you left.
Uh-huh.
And naturally, they were filled by other people because they had to keep up the balance. So we all felt kind of bad if they had to lay anyone off, which was down to seniority, strictly seniority.
Well, getting back to the your trip across the country, you stopped in Chicago but weren't able to make contact with family. And you said you went to Salt Lake City.
Well, right.
Any other interesting events happened before you got out to the West Coast?
I think the fact that we went over Salt Lake City. Oh, we stopped in Vegas too. We stopped and we had a couple hours and we bought things with regular currency, and they give you back silver dollars. During the war and that time of the year or years, dollar coins were used in a lot of places like that because I don't know why Vegas and most of your Western towns, they give you, buy $10, you get $9 in silver dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I remember Vegas. But to tell you if I gambled or not, I don't think so. It was just maybe get off the train, maybe get somewhere close by, because you were given a certain time to get back on again. And there again, too.
At the time,
yes.
Vegas was very small.
Yeah. Yeah, and that time it was real small in 1943 to 44.
Uh-huh.
But in fact, I think they warned us that you'd be AWOL if you weren't picked up.
You don't remember if you actually saw any casinos then?
I don't remember going in one. In fact, I was so green at it. You know, you think you see you in Vegas while you was. I said, no, I wasn't near one.
Well, just for the record, this would have been 1945, because you said this was after
they're sending
you out to the West Coast.
Yeah.
So you get to the West Coast, then what?
We were put in a holding area. And
what city was that?
And San Francisco.
Okay.
And we were right on the bay. We could see Alcatraz. It was actually a warehouse, and they put three-tier bunk beds in there, and that's all the Coast Guardsmen that were coming from to fill ships,
mm-hmm.
to fill men that are on ships. And you were held there, and then you'd be assigned, then they take your truck again with the, you know, the canvas tops. They take you to the ship with your sea bag, and you were part of that ship's crew. So that's how I got on the Chase. I was actually assigned to the Cavalier. Now I'm trying to think of that movie star. There was a movie star that was on the ship, the Cavalier. And I seen Cavalier written out, and then they crossed it and they put Chase on it.
Uh-huh. Was that Cesar Romero?
Yes, Cesar Romero. Yeah, I think it was him.
But we just took a short break, and right before we did, Al's wife, Mrs. Moscato, reminded him of a movie actor that was on the ship. He didn't get on. And I think this is probably a time I should introduce Mrs. Moscato, Mrs. Shirley Moscato, who's sitting here with the interview, letting Al do all the talking. But every once in a while, she'll remember something, as all good wives do, that needs to be corrected. So, Al Shirley said that you knew that Cesar Romero was going to be on the Cavalier. Do you know why he was going to be on that ship?
Well, he was assigned to the ship, and we all, everyone in our service, they always mentioned, like, Jack Dempsey.
Oh, Cesar Romero was actually in the Coast Guard?
Oh, yeah. Oh. He was a member of the crew. And my wife didn't know about it. I told her when I come home that I was assigned to the ship and they crossed me out.
Oh, so then you got assigned to the Chase.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so we will cut to the Chase. Describe for me, if you would, your experiences on the Chase and where you went.
Okay. Well, there was three other ports here that I forgot to bring in my...
What was your first sailing after you were assigned to the Chase?
Well, while I was still on the Megs, there was three other ports I forgot about.
Oh, okay. Anything happened in any of those?
Were just going through the canal.
On the Megs?
Yeah, the Megs went through a rut, and then we came back.
What was the purpose of that trip?
I don't know. But we stayed in one port on the other side of the Pacific. Then we come back and went to San Juan. And then Balboa, which is in South America. I don't know where it's at. I just put down Balboa. That probably would remember. But I think we can leave it at that. There was nothing went on. Just the fact that we went through
the Panama
Canal, and that we could add that to our itinerary. But it was not. It was good. We learned a lot about the locks, and then I got assigned to the Chase, Samuel Chase. Want me to continue?
Yes, please.
And we started to bring troops to take them onto Japanese fighting areas. We had the Seabees we brought over. It was a whole complement. Now this ship wasn't as big as the Megs. This probably was maybe 1,000 less, but still had a big group of soldiers.
Did besides transporting the men, did you transport any of their equipment, any of the CB's construction equipment?
Oh yeah, we had holds where they dropped our davits, picked up jeeps, and they were put in. They carried so much. We try to fill the lower bottom of the ship, cargo rooms, with whatever we could to bring them to the troops. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they went down four decks below the top deck into the bowels, and then they had a way of covering the hole up there and then send them down again. They had these big hatch covers. They were like planks, only they were steel. And they just filled up all the So they made a level for like a room area, then on either side was places to put one. So that was done all the way up until they got on the top side. And then the top side was covered the same way, and they put a big canvas on it. And that's where they held our, we used to have boxing and to get the crew involved with the men to give them something to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we had made a mat, we had bought a mat, and then we had the ring, all the ring made up. And then, of course, we had the referees. First time I had boxing gloves on it, I boxed a friend of mine.
Oh, you participated?
Yeah, he corked me a couple times. And I decided that I didn't go down. I raised my hands and said, that's enough. But it was a little entertainment, soldiers against the crew.
Uh-huh.
And on our crew, we did have a fighter, a boxer. I don't remember his name, but we had to let him know to let the other guys win. Especially when we were in Brazil. The Brazilians were standing there going like this to us, and they all carry knives. I don't know why.
You just made the gesture of drawing just your finger across your throat. Like.
Otherwise, we saw us looking at them, you know, otherwise we're looking at the troops. And this guy, well, then finally this little guy, what he did, he let him back him in the corner. He more or less, they had boxing, the big 16-ounce gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And he put his hand, he let the guy really lay it into him. The referee says, you won. So it made them feel a little bit better that they could win, you know. But they had boxing bouts, and that's about all I can remember they had for the troops.
So on your trip from San Francisco with the troops headed for the South Pacific, where did you take them?
Well, we took them all the way to Japan. But on the way, we had to stop at Aniwita. I think Aniwita.
They so took all the way to Japan. Had the war ended by this time?
No. Not, Japanese
these
were...
These weren't occupation forces. No. These were...
Fighting troops, yes.
Uh-huh.
And we landed in Okinawa, and they were still fighting on the island.
Mm-hmm.
They had secured it, but not totally.
Still some pockets of resistance.
So you hear at night, you hear the firing of guns. They got into the caves. There's a lot of caves on Okinawa.
Mm-hmm.
And they went in there with, I imagine, the torch guns or
flamethrowers.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was one here not too many years ago. I think it was in Okinawa where he thought the war was still going. And he was something like that.
20 or 30 years after the war ended.
So anyway, we stayed there. A little incident happened. They were dive bombing all the ships, suicide planes.
Mm-hmm.
I think you heard about that. And we were in Buckner Bay, a bay on this side, and around the other side there was other ships there. Well, us being a troop carrier, because we still were part, we were an attack ship with troops aboard. So they got us and put us out to sea, and they put in two smoke boats. You always, when you anchor, you always, your bow always faces the way the wind's blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Then they put these two smoke boats, we had these big canisters that we could light in case there was an attack. And we sat there, and if there was, they knew we got to pick up if the planes were coming our way, we'd light them. But evidently they did, but they sunk the destroyer Callahan. I never forget the name. And I guess it went down and it opened up, and it was on a destroyer which they called tin cans.
Mm-hmm.
They said they were all welded, they weren't riveted. They say they take a hit of it, open up like a sardine can. So she went down with all hands.
And was that Callahan? Was that in the same bay you were in?
No, it was in a bay. It was on the bay or on the other side. Okinawa was pretty big.
Oh.
And we got the information that the Callahan was sunk. I don't imagine they all went down. There probably were, probably a lot of them were saved, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pulled out of there and we left for Japan, but it seemed like we always went so far, stop and go somewhere else. Then we left Panama, Okinawa, and we somehow wound up in Leyte, the Philippines, Cebu, in the Philippines, Okinawa, Leyte. So in that same area, we went to two or three islands, but there again, I can't tell you what the reason was for it. And then we left for Yokohama, Japan.
And you don't know what you were carrying?
No, we were carrying the 33rd, what did I say?
CBs, the construction battalion?
Yes, that's what they were, construction battalion.
But you were carrying wounded back.
Oh, yeah, every trip we made, we always, our sick bay, which we had so many beds, we'd take as many soldiers that were pretty bad shape.
Were you making trips back and forth across the Pacific, back to the U.S.? Between the islands?
Just one. We made it, dropped the troops off, and when we dropped the troops, I don't know if it was before or after, the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, celebrations were all, but they that's when they dropped the two bombs.
Mm-hmm. Where were you exactly when
the war,
was over, when we had VK Day?
I was actually out to sea.
You're out to sea. And how did they pass the news to you that everything was done?
Yeah, they have a PA system,
uh-huh.
Like you hear on the...
Do you remember how they said it?
The chaplain, come on.
The chaplain made the announcement?
Yeah, this is Father... No, not Father. He wasn't a Catholic priest. He's so-and-so minister. He said, I'm going to report that the war is over in Japan. Of course, the damn ship went crazy.
Uh-huh.
But we... I don't know if we laid out. I can't remember if we had the troops off or not. I can't remember that. But anyway, I can't pronounce the word. O-T-A-R-U.
Otaru?
Otaru, yeah. That's where we dropped the soldiers off. And they were put on land naturally to fight. Well, the war was over, so they used them as to come in as like marshals.
Occupation force.
Uh-huh. Of course, they didn't have to use all of them, but we couldn't take anyone back because our job was to bring them there. And then we had other places to go. We went to Samoa and the Philippines, and then we came back.
What did you go to Samoa for, do you know?
I have no idea. These other names... A lot of them didn't have a dock or a pier. See, yeah. We were in Aniwetok, or Ulithi's actually, the name was Ulithi. In fact, I think they dropped a bomb in that thing, an A-bomb. Yes. I think they blew it out of the water.
Test bomb.
And after the war, they did a big, one of those mega atom bombs or whatever. Mm-hmm. So
then... After that Samoa, then you came back to the United States?
Yeah.
With your ship. And then what happened with you?
We were not discharged, taken off the ship and sent to an area where you were set up to get discharged.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, we're too far from where I lived, so naturally they had to send you to the nearest city, which was St. Louis. So they took me to St. Louis.
By train?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then we left St. Louis and a train brought us to Chicago.
Did your family know that you were discharged?
Yes, well, I think I did call them then.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I called them.
Was there anyone there to meet you when you came back to the...
No. They came to Chicago, they came to meet me.
Right.
Yeah, but...
What was that like?
Oh, well, naturally, you were walking around with, like this, with your fingers, and word. But it was... And naturally, it was still only, 19 or 20 probably.
Uh-huh.
And it made for a lot of drinking, which was part of the deal when you get out. Every place you went, you couldn't spend a quarter. Of course, beer was only about 25 cents a glass.
I just have to put one little thing in, though. I was at Riverview VJ Day.
When they announced that the war was finally over, you were at the old Riverview Amusement Park?
Oh, it's a day I'll never forget.
Well, what was it like for you? How old were you at the time?
I was a year younger than he was. Uh-huh. Yeah, because I graduated.
But she still didn't know me yet.
No, I didn't know her.
Yeah, then, because she remembered.
But I knew a lot of boys that I was in high school with uh-huh. that had gone. Some had died. We even knew. But it was such a day. Oh my gosh.
The celebration in Chicago was really.
Well, I think just New York was. You. That was all I could remember coming home then. But
I think New York was considered where it had all the pictures for Life magazine.
That's the Life magazine photos. The sailor bent the girl over.
Bent the girl over.
Backwards and giving her a big kiss.
Any guy seen you, a girl would see you, it naturally was, when a plant went on you, But.
Al, you were discharged and you got out. You're back in Chicago. What happened next?
Well, I wanted to take about 3 weeks off before I went to work. Mm-hmm. But my father, who happened to work in the same plant I did, he come home and he said, Al, the boss has told me, if you could come in earlier, I mean, if you're thinking of taking time off, they wish you wouldn't. So I think I was home for 4 days, the weekend come, and I was working. But he told me, he said, they'll be letting people go if you come later. He's this way they'll be able to position them mm-hmm. In other jobs. But so that's what happened. I got went back to work, and I worked for I don't know how many years, from I was 20. And then me and her got married. Well, that doesn't need to be.
I'm going to ask you specifically about that, but just to wrap up your job, you worked your entire career.
Before, I was only working 7 months, and I went into service, and that was enough to ensure that I would have a job.
And did you stay there for the rest of your career then?
Yeah, after that. Oh, no, and I stayed there for, I moved to different jobs after that.
But at the same company?
No.
Oh.
Just, I quit that job and went for more paying money. Because they weren't, them days they weren't paying that much. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, how about Shirley? How did you meet her?
Well, we went to this funeral, and I was still in uniform because I don't know why I walked around in uniform. I suppose to brag about the fact that come on.
I was going to guess.
Who knows? And I had my not medals, my campaign ribbons.
Uh huh.
Which I was trying to remember which one it was. I know it was the Atlantic Theater, Pacific Theater, and then one for being in the service was kind of an orange, but I don't remember what that was.
But anyway, you're all decked out on this uniform.
My few bars. If you guys come in with it, I mean, this many.
And here's a single young lady. Then what?
Well, we both met there, and for some reason or other, like she said before, her mother and this aunt, not an aunt, it was an aunt of mine, they were real friendly. So for some reason or other, one of the women says, we ought to get Al to, he says, Shirley wasn't going out or didn't have a date or something. And
well, we met one other time when you were, his aunt owned a tavern in Volo, and he and his brother were on their way up.
Volo, Illinois, near the Wisconsin border?
Yeah, and he and his stepbrother were going up there to help her out with this tavern. Her husband had died, mm-hmm. and we met.
She knows more than I do.
You came stopped at the house,
yeah.
and that was the second time I saw him. And the next time, it was our first date then.
So I don't know how. I don't know how it really started or actually asked her. My brother was always coming up to New Year's, mm-hmm. and I didn't have a date for New Year's. I didn't know she didn't, so I called her up and I asked her if she wanted. I think that's the way it went. Mm-hmm. She wanted to go out for New Year's Eve. So
uh-huh.
my brother and his wife, he was married at the time, and the four of us, she took the streetcar from Milwaukee and Devon over to Western. Milwaukee and Western, and she came all the way from that far south to ours to get to see me. I didn't go pick her up.
You were the uniform.
He didn't drive.
I didn't drive. I didn't know how to drive. That's right.
So was it you or the uniform?
She had seen me.
Well,
in uniform.
It was his aunt and my mother were friendly.
Uh huh.
So it was that's how, and I knew I was going to stay overnight and with his aunt.
Uh huh.
She lived upstairs of him and his mother.
So when did you get married? What year?
48.
1948.
Uh-huh.
What was the month? November? October 23rd?
You got it.
I got the date, so I come close.
And you have a family?
Had the boy and a girl, and...
The girl lives... We added an addition to our home.
Mm-hmm.
And she's living... She was very concerned about my age, that she didn't want me to go into a home.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I want you here, and we're going to take care of you. So, geez, well, how often do you hear of a child or daughter or son
that much?
That would most of them would say, well, we'll put you in there. How much money you got? Well, we'll put you in this. How long will it last? A year. Well, from there, you're going to, I don't know where we go from there. So that's... more or less a story of my...
Well, now, since you've been out of the service, I mean, this is... You got out, what, 45 or 46?
44, I think, wasn't it?
46.
April 46. Sure, that's right.
46.
We'll always ask her. April of 46. So that's, 58 years ago. Have you had any contact with any of your shipmates since then?
Well, we had a... We had a reunion aboard the Chase, the crew, the Chase, that either mothballed or mm-hmm. I think it's probably dismantled. Because mm-hmm. most of them older ships, they didn't keep them.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Mystic, Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
And our ship, they sent us the newsletter to tell us where it was going to be and the hotel and motel. And what they were going to do, they were going to take us to the Coast Guard Academy
mm-hmm.
and they had a reviewing of our ship, all our members, I should mm-hmm. say.
Roughly and how many of them attended of your ship?
I would say maybe 35 or 40.
Out of how many?
Well, a lot of them had died, but our age wasn't that bad. How old was that?
It was in 1986.
So four off of, I was 8 years younger, so I was just 70 or 71. And
have you had any other contact with any of your other shipmates by Christmas cards or letters?
No, I don't think so.
We get the newsletter every year.
Yeah, the newsletter said that we sent them a donation to keep it going.
If I can add this, the trouble with the reunion was when we went, it was the Chase.
Mm-hmm.
But most of those men were on the Chase in the Atlantic.
Oh.
He wasn't on that ship time.
Yeah.
And there was no one, only maybe one or two from the Pacific. So he didn't know any of
hardly
these men.
No, just one or two.
He went and then one didn't come.
Yeah.
And he kind of broke away from it then.
So,
have you joined any veterans organizations?
No.
That was the one reunion you attended then.
Yeah, well, what happens, Marty, every year they have it, and they have it at different places.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've been to Florida, Connecticut.
Texas.
California. See, each year, it's quite expensive to pick up and go.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was making the money that some of them were making,
uh-huh.
I probably would make every one of them because it's a nice 4 days.
But most of them are out east because most of those crew members were from
New York. Yeah, New York supplied an awful lot of sailors. And
I've asked just about all the questions I have. Close to wrapping up, but before I do, is there anything else that we haven't talked about you think would be good to have on the record for the project?
The Samuel Chase was in five invasions. From D-Day, I don't remember the Italian, you'd have to look that up, Marty. I don't remember the names of the beachheads.
Oh, the Chase or the MiGs?
No, the Chase. The MiGs was strictly a transport.
Oh, okay.
The Chase was an APA. It's a tank.
Oh, so Chase was on the European invasions before you joined her.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. And she was in five invasions, and not one hull was hit. She wasn't hit by a bomb or anything. And with that in mind, they called it a Lucky Chase.
Oh.
And their insignias on the LCVPs, which lands soldiers and maybe a small Jeep or something. Mm-hmm. Their capacity is a Jeep. And they, of course, the ones you see where they drop the front part and mm-hmm. you see them running off.
Right.
That's what we had aboard. And where was I going with this?
I don't, but the one thing you have to tell is the thing in Connecticut. They had a ceremony and they threw the wreath in the river, in the Mystic River, when they played it. And they had a whole reviewing parade for the men.
Mm-hmm. All the ensigns and all.
At the academy paraded.
All the active duty.
Yeah, they had the drums and the whole bit orchestra or the band. And we sat in review. Otherwise, we sat on benches that go up, and then they passed in review. And then naturally, when they all saluted us, because our ship is actually written up in the Coast Guard annals, the annals of the Coast Guard,
mm-hmm.
for being that lucky, being in 5 invasion and mm-hmm. making it back. The only they lost was crew members that were driving these VPs. They'd get hit, and get killed that way. But as far as the ship, when they lay off about, I don't know, a mile or so offshore,
uh-huh.
then they let the have these nets that roll down. You see the soldiers going down these
right.
nets right into the boat,
uh-huh.
and then they're taken away when they load up. So I can fortunately say I was on a ship that was rated very high in Groton, Connecticut, or in Mystic. Where is the
other two? We were supposed to go aboard a ship to view it, but they were working on a ship and we couldn't go.
Where they train? I can't think of the word. Academy.
Uh-huh.
Coast Guard Academy. They got little areas where they got parts of the ship.
Uh-huh.
That didn't. And then of course the Chases. Well, the most decorated ship in the Coast Guard. Yes.
You served on it.
Yep. Unfortunately, I wasn't on it when it made all the landings.
So, you're. Plus years in the Coast Guard and experiences you had, do you feel that they affected your life in any way?
Not that I know of.
He didn't talk about it ever. I've heard stuff today that I never heard.
Well, I think Marty knows and understands that World War II veterans, they didn't have anything to come back like the
Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. They were treated like, you know, crap. At least we come back to bands and people wanting to see us ticker tape parades. The Vietnam, they didn't do that, as far as I know. I don't.
It took them a long time to talk about the not the prisoners, but the wounded that you brought back.
I think he knows and understands that.
Well, no, you actually did see the,
Well, they came aboard, they were brought in litters. The Army comes up with their litter, which is canvas on two things. The Coast Guard had a litter made out of wire, mold of a person, but it's all wire around the top, so you could pick it up by, what they did, they picked them up with the dab, they hooked up. 2 or 3, I think they put them on a platform. They brought them up that way.
Were you involved at all with the care of those wounded?
Yes, our medical.
Did you bring them meals or anything? You personally?
No. That was all done by. They had messmen mm-hmm. that were attached to the See, messmen covered the officers' quarters, the crew quarters, and sick bay. And of course, we filled out we had one, this fellow who was part of our crew found out his brother was in sick bay. He was a pilot. Well, he went in there and both of his legs were taken off. I guess it was a sad affair. Well, the chaplain got him discharged. Well, not discharged, got him off the ship, the next port. And of course he went home. with his brother. But I guess, according to what we heard, that the brother was in pretty good spirits, but it was, he found out right then and there that his brother had lost both legs.
He didn't know before. I'm glad you mentioned the brother, because that reminded me of something else I wanted to ask you. Your older brother that...
I think I know what you're
talking about. Told you to go on the Coast Guard. Were you in contact with him at all during the...
Yeah, that's what I knew you were going to say. Not really. I don't ever remember having his address. Although he was with the Air Force, but he wasn't a pilot or anything. He was attached to some Air Force unit.
But he came out of the war okay.
Yeah, but he seemed a lot more than I did. So he had some memories that wasn't too good.
Well, I guess I'm about ready to wrap up, unless you can, either of you can think of anything else that you want to talk about.
The one thing you used to tell me, though, was when you took the troops over, they only ate twice a day.
They didn't have
But the men, the Coast Guard boys, ate three times a day
and got to stay in the stern car of the train and not ride in the boxcar.
Well, no, mostly for the fact that we did all the work aboard ship going over. They didn't. They sat and laid around. You go on deck, everyone was laying. You had to walk around like, pass them up like this, because they were spread all out.
Uh-huh.
Then, of course, I told you, when there was an air raid or a thought of an air raid or a submarine attack, they had to go in their quarters, and they claimed that was hell. Because they're all down there, and they're below waterline, you know. Mm-hmm. These damn decks go all the way down, and they figure if a torpedo hits them, they ain't gonna even know what hit them.
Right.
So you're staying down there, and you a lot of things go through your mind when you're below decks, as she could tell you when we went on our cruise. She thought we were underwater. We really wasn't. And she said, we're underwater. I'm saying, yeah, we got it. We're in the bowels of the ship, the last corner down. Oh, that's about all I got, Marty. All I can say was nice of you to spend our time in this.
Well, and thank you very much for participating in the Veterans History Project. We will certainly... historians somewhere down the way are going to be able to read this and know of experiences
maybe
they hadn't heard of before.
Yeah, well, we each got our own little story, I think. Some of it's good, and I tell you the truth. I talked to some guys we brought back, you wouldn't want to see or hear what they had to say about the Germans. We had prisoners. See, when we come back, Marty, I see these are things I just thought of. You're 18, but no, Marty.
Yeah,
most of them. Yeah. Well, we brought German officers back in to put them in prisons, and they were treated with that Geneva Convention.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be treated as an officer. Mm-hmm. No one saluted them. So they were walking on this deck. You'd see them, the deck above, and all the rest of the